The next case is 07-1455, Beneficial Ohio Inc. versus Dale S. Ellis et al. Ms. Bauer.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Amelia Bauer on behalf of Beneficial Ohio.
Counsel, I hastened here. We have a recusal by Justice Cupp, and Judge Boyle is going to be sitting. Judge Mary Boyle is going to be sitting for Justice Cupp, if we can get her in here. We usually take a recess, but since the earlier cases move so quickly, we're ahead of schedule here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. As I indicated, Justice Cupp has recused himself. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cupp, Judge Mary Boyle, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 8th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Boyle.
Thank you.
Ms. Bauer, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time, if I might, for rebuttal. The issue in this case, Your Honors, is when does Liz Pendens attach to cut off rights of third parties in litigation? The majority in the Court of Appeals held that service upon Indy defendant constitutes a Liz Pendens to cut off those rights, and that conclusion was based on the notion of commencement under Civil Rule 3A and the Pease case coming out of the 10th District Court of Appeals. Ironically, the court in Pease discussed the differentiation between Liz Pendens and commencement and found they were, in fact, separate concepts and not allied, and also that service upon a single defendant in litigation was not necessarily a Liz Pendens, as the court merely noted that as a matter of fact in the issues before the court, the mortgage in question having been recorded before anyone was served in the case. So the appellate court in this case decided to adopt the what I call the first service rule, even though there seems to be no precedent for that coming out of the Pease court, and also the rule of commencement, which is apposite to the doctrine of or the notion of Liz Pendens completely.
Unfortunately, our Liz Pendens rule in Ohio, the General Assembly did not give us much help on this issue, did it? It's a very general statute, which is, you know, as you know, just says essentially when somebody's served, actions commenced, and that there's no definition of no selection of which view in the country Ohio has chosen in its statute. So if we just take the plain words of the statute on their face, the words on their face, it would appear that if one party is served, that satisfies the statute, doesn't it? Even though that seems to be against the general view in other jurisdictions.
Your Honor, I actually think there is a resolution to the question that the statute is admittedly brief, and I think the phrase that it leaves out when you think about how to interpret the statute and how one might craft a resolution of the question lies in the commentators, which we have cited in our brief, and the history of Liz Pendens, which goes back into the early 19th century. And all of the commentators noted two things. One is a Liz Pendens can only attach to property which can be the subject of a Liz Pendens, in other words, real estate. And it must be sufficiently described in the complaint. But the third component is in personam and subject matter jurisdiction. And all of the commentators say, going back into the early parts of our jurisprudence, that in order for the court to have jurisdiction over a party who's involved with the property, those who are bound with that party are only bound through service of process because Liz Pendens relies upon the relationship between the parties. In other words, at common law, the rule was that Liz Pendens attached at the filing time of filing of the complaint. This state never adopted that proposition. So our statutes going back started from the proposition of how do we get jurisdiction over the property and how do we get jurisdiction over the person, remembering that the concept, what is stated in the statute, is the person from whom the third party who's being challenged in the lis pendens, how does that relationship occur? If the party defendant who is not served is in relationship, in this case with a lender and seeking a mortgage loan, that borrower may not know that he's been served with a lawsuit. So the statute, if we read it in its brevity, eliminates what had been the practice for centuries and decades in this state, centuries in the common law, which was the party for whom lis pendens is asserted to challenge their interest must acquire that interest from someone who's a party to the litigation, and therefore that party has to have been served, unlike the common law rule that lis pendens flowed from commencement or from filing of the case. And in fact, this court in the case Cook versus Mosier decided in 1923 found that to be the case and noted specifically that the issue is one of public policy for the party acquiring the interest because he is bound to the notice of his, what I would call, seller, borrower, mortgagor, lessor with whom he deals in the case of real property. So in fact, the statute seems to be ambiguous and seems to lack that phraseology, Mr. Chief Justice, but the commentators were so clear on that point at the time. I think if we recall that the statute was enacted in the early 1820s, originally in its original form, it was so well understood that the third party being attacked couldn't be attacked unless he had noticed through his, the party within who he was in privity with, that phrase was just eliminated from the statute. And the reason I raise it that way is in thinking about how to ask this court for a remedy to affirm Cook, which I think is what should happen here. When you think about how to craft the lis pendens, we couldn't say with service upon an owner, or as some commentators and practitioners in the real estate business in the state call the primary defendant, which we might equate to being the owner of the property, a lessor, a borrower, a vendor, but lis pendens doesn't necessarily limit itself to that point. So how to craft the language that would be the explanation, if you will, of upon whom service needs to be rendered, I think becomes the dilemma. And I came to the conclusion that there's no really good way that I'm aware of, not being that smart, to figure out how to say that, Your Honor, after the phrase service. So I think the problem we have coming out of the Court of Appeals is twofold. One is the decision ignored Cook, which I think is very explicit, and its predecessor, the Tollerton case, which was also a case out of this court, and also the commentators on the law at the point deciding just exactly what a lis pendens is.
Ms. Bauer, isn't this an issue for the legislature, though? I mean, the statute was effective in 1953, and what you're arguing for is an additional phrase to be added on to support your position.
Actually, Your Honor, I'm not arguing for the additional phrase. I think the statute is complete the way it is written. I think that it might be helpful because we have a tendency to want to read explicit language into a statute that is missing, I think, purposely in this statute. But back to your initial question, yes, I do think this is an issue for the legislature ultimately, and to be frank about it, I'm aware that the legislature is currently considering a change to the rule lis pendens along with several other procedural remedies having to do, frankly, with the current mortgage crisis. I don't know where that stands, but I don't actually think, Your Honor, that this court needs to change the statute or add to it. I think the statute is complete. I think what we need to do here is reaffirm what this court said in Cook, that in essence, the doctrine lis pendens must apply to the person from whom the third party acquires its interest in order to bind them, so that we have people in relationship with each other that are subject to a Liz Pendens. The best example I could give of this is, assume for the moment you have a property where there's an easement being created and a mortgage created, and the mortgage is by a lessor, and the easement might be created by the owner without consent of the lessor, and the both documents, the easement and the mortgage, are filed after a Liz Pendens is attached. In other words, the owner or the lessor has been served with a suit. But if the Liz Pendens affects the lessor and his mortgagee, it may not affect the owner and the person to whom he grants easement rights. So we wouldn't necessarily say under the current holding in Cook, absent the appellant, the decision in the Court of Appeals here, that that owner is bound because he's not in privity with that mortgage or the borrower's, the lessor's mortgagee. If we adopt the rule announced by this Court of Appeals, which I note has not been adopted in over 90 years of practice with the decision in Cook and the reading of the Liz Pendens statute in this state, has been upheld in at least three appellate jurisdictions. If we adopt that point of view, then everybody gets tagged with Liz Pendens. And I think, Your Honor, this state, going back in the 1820s, did not adopt the common law rule, which, remember, is that Liz Pendens attaches at the time of filing, because there's no privity between necessarily the plaintiff in that litigation and parties with whom one would deal with the property.
Isn't this all a matter of notice, though? Notice of the litigation involving the subject real property. How difficult would it have been for Beneficial to find that there was litigation concerning this parcel?
Yes, it is in part a notice question, Your Honor. Remember that this court in Cook said Liz Pendens is partly notice, and the commentators have said this, but is also public policy, the public policy being a plaintiff in litigation that is the subject of a Liz Pendens needs and wants to be protected so the property isn't alienated or conveyed away from him or her at the time. That's the reason we have a rule. At the same time, we have to afford some notice to people dealing with the property, if you will, and how they deal with it. So in this case, Beneficial did not discover, at least from what I've been able to read in their loan file, the pending litigation. I would submit, however, that even if they had discovered the litigation, acting under the way Cook has been interpreted in this state for almost a century, you would notice that Mr. Ellis was not served for 2 months after the suit was filed. Excuse me, he signed his mortgage, and it was recorded 1 day before he was served, and Liz Pendens, under the interpretation of Cook that's been in place, would not have cut off their rights. So it's almost irrelevant that Beneficial didn't find the case. But had they, or the other side of it is, of course, had they, the appellees shown that they had actual notice, then I think they wouldn't be able to defend under the doctrine of Liz Pendens. But yes, Liz Pendens has as its core two notions. One is notice. How to get notice to the third party becomes the question, and public policy. The tension is always, how do we protect the property in the hands of a plaintiff who is obviously aggrieved with people dealing with the property who wouldn't necessarily know, absent, frankly, in this day and age, going, as noted by the dissenting opinion on appeal, going on the computer and maybe looking it up and seeing that there's been a suit filed. That being said, I think, again, Your Honors, that the Cook case is explicit enough. I would suggest that we do not need to amend the statute. It's complete in its history, which sometimes is a little daunting to real estate practitioners today. Sometimes, of course, we joke that there isn't a statute that's less than 100 years old that we have to deal with. The practitioners of the day understood the doctrine Liz Pendens, and it's only in modern times that this issue of ambiguity, or as Mr. Chief Justice has pointed out, a lack in the statute, that has come to fore. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bauer. Mr. Rudloff.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Ms. Bauer, I believe that we're here today simply because the issue that is before this court has not been decided with any clarity. The Cook case that Ms. Bauer referred to, I do not believe stands for the proposition that she has asserted. The language that she referred to was part of a definition that the court used in simply defining what Les Pendants was historically, but the Cook actually dealt with whether real property had been adequately described in a domestic proceeding so as to give notice to a third party. The Ohio legislature, I believe, has clearly and unambiguously used very specific language in 2703-26 when it says, when summons has been served, the action is pending. If the legislature intended for summons to be served on a particular party in interest in the real property, it could have clearly said that, but did not. I believe that that is evidence of the legislative intent that service upon any defendant is sufficient.
Are you in agreement that someone that has a tax lien on this property, if service, like a government agency, service on them is sufficient?
I believe it is, Your Honor. The law clearly requires that everybody who has an interest in property that's subject to a foreclosure proceeding, as in this case, be given notice and be named. So the service certainly on a lien holder, whether it's for taxes or a junior mortgage holder or a first mortgage holder, as in this case, I believe is sufficient.
How does that calculate to give notice?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
How does that calculate to give notice? Because notice is an important part of the process.
Well, it doesn't have to be actual notice. I believe that it's constructive notice. And the purpose, of course, of Les Pendants is that when this service on one of these parties in interest in the real property has been perfected, then the court has jurisdiction over this property, and it cuts off folks who come along at a later point in time and tries to acquire an interest, or at least whatever they're acquiring is going to be subject to those judicial proceedings. So it really is, in my judgment, not so much a notice, actual notice, as constructive notice. And the court at some point has to be able to have control of this property so that it doesn't continuously be alienated through the process. Based upon the issues before us, I think the very narrow question is, if service is made upon any defendant, is that sufficient to invoke the doctrine of Les Pendants? The Peace case was the only case, I think, that either side located where there was some implication that service upon a defendant would be sufficient to invoke the doctrine. I have not found any similar cases in Ohio or elsewhere where there were multiple defendants and one of those who perhaps wasn't the actual title holder, a lien holder, a mortgage holder, was first served. So this certainly is a matter of first impression for this court, in my judgment. It's the request of the appellees in this case that that you folks affirm the Court of Appeals decision and adopt the proposition of law that we have set forth, that service of summons upon any party having an interest in the property is sufficient to invoke the doctrine of Les Pendants. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Redloff. Ms. Bauer, you've saved 2 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to read the portion from Cook that answers the question. This is how we get to notice, and this is how we get to Les Pendants. This court said that the third party is as conclusively bound by the result of the litigation as if he had been a party thereto from the outset. In other words, the party from whom that lender acquires its interest has to be served, so he is bound by as if he had been the defendant in the pending litigation. That has been the rule, Les Pendants, going back 2 centuries. It's never been challenged in this state. To suggest that service, I always think the easiest way to argue it is to say service on the treasurer, who frankly, if you file a complaint, you can walk it right down the hall and serve the treasurer, is the easiest thing to do. But then how does the court get jurisdiction over the property through service on a lien creditor, which is what a treasurer is, or in this case, service on Bank One, who is what, a lien creditor of Mr. Ellis's? Beneficial's not in privity with either of those two parties. The rule Liz Pendens requires that contractual, or I don't want necessarily contractual relationship, in order to create the notice that brings them into the suit. Why is that important? Because the public policy is to protect the interests of that plaintiff in the litigation. Had Ohio adopted the common law rule, which was we have Liz Pendens as of the filing of the complaint, then everybody dealing with the property, regardless whether you had actual notice or not, is bound. We didn't go that far for the very reason enunciated by this court that in order to get those parties before the court and have subject matter jurisdiction, we have to have service on the party in relationship with that third party. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bauer. The case is submitted. Be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.